The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the day long that Jim mentions is the ending of a week of a daily life practice retreat, and we started yesterday, and we're meeting every morning and every evening, and the talk tonight is related to the theme of this week. So it's kind of a little stealth retreat in the midst of this evening talk here. The day-long on Saturday, everyone is welcome to join the day-long. You don't have to have attended the retreat to attend the day-long. It's open to everyone, and I'll be teaching a practice taught by my teacher in Burma, Sayadaw Utejaniya. So it's a little different than the usual day-long that we teach here. It's got a slightly different focus to it, so everyone is welcome to come to that on Saturday. So as we engage in our mindfulness practice, whether in sitting or in daily life, we often find ourselves meeting our own challenges, our own struggles, our own difficulties, that the places where we rub up against ourselves, rub up against other people, rub up against the things we don't like, the things we don't want, the things we do like, the things we want to hold on to, the things we want to keep. And in the process, the practice of paying attention, we sometimes feel like the whole practice is about paying attention to those things. You know, if it's a pattern of fear that's coming up for us, if we notice that we have a lot of fear, we feel like the practice is around the fear. And there is some truth to that. There is some, you know, the meeting of that, the ability to turn towards the fear or whatever your own personal challenge is. That's a large part of what we learn how to do, how to actually engage and not turn away from that. But sometimes we end up orienting so much around the struggles and challenges that we don't actually notice or don't recognize that there's a lot happening to us as we pay attention. That the process of paying attention itself has some very powerful impacts on us. Not simply the shifts around the experience of whatever it is we're paying attention to, but there's some very beautiful qualities that are kind of being introduced into our mind and body as we practice mindfulness. So this is beginning to look at how do we observe our experience? What do we notice about how the mind observes experience? And so tonight I'd like to talk about this, but it's going to be kind of I'm going to kind of blend two topics together tonight. I'm going to talk about fear and working with fear, but I'm going to talk about it through this perspective of what are these other qualities that kind of come along for the ride as we bring our mindfulness to fear. There's many such qualities that are cultivated as we engage in mindfulness practice. Tonight I'm going to focus on a particular set of five qualities. And these are often called the five faculties. And I'm just going to name them right now. They are confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. So as we engage with our struggles, these qualities both support our ability to meet our challenges and are also cultivated as we engage in our practice. So the main kind of purpose I want to bring in here is to the reason I want to talk about it this way is that, you know, with something like fear in particular, we're often so oriented on how can I get rid of this fear that we're not recognizing that there's a lot happening as we're simply observing the fear. There's a lot that's being grown and developed and cultivated. So I want to point out through going through these five qualities and talking about how we meet fear with these five qualities. In fact, these five qualities are sometimes talked about as being the skills that allow us to be attentive, the skills that allow us to bring our mindfulness to bear on experience. So these are skills. They're not only qualities, but they're skills. And so these are cultivated. And also it's helpful to recognize that when we notice these kinds of qualities coming up in our experience, that the actual recognition of these kinds of qualities, I mean, they come along for the ride anyway. They do come along for the ride anyway. But if we actually recognize them and notice them, that very recognition begins to strengthen those qualities. So these five qualities, these five skills, confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, support each other in several ways. But one of the kind of typical ways that they support each other is that they kind of feed from one into another. If we have confidence in what we're doing, whether it's meditation or whether it's any kind of a skill, if we have confidence in what we're doing, we have the energy to engage in it. So that's the confidence and the energy. As we engage with energy, that engagement with energy, that kind of persistence of engaging, brings along the awareness of what we're doing. The kind of persistence of engaging brings along the awareness, which is the mindfulness. As we engage persistently with mindfulness, the kind of continuity, the mindfulness being meeting experience over time, develops concentration. And with that concentration and mindfulness together, we begin to understand how to live our lives skillfully. That the those two pieces, the concentration and mindfulness, begin to show us how we are making our choices around our reactivity, our movement in the world. So in these five faculties, typically confidence is considered first. It's typically the first one that's usually talked about. But I actually like to start this talk with wisdom, because we need to kind of know what we're engaging with. We need to have some kind of understanding about what we're doing before we have any confidence to have a sense of doing anything about it. And so that's where I'd like to begin this evening, is to talk about wisdom. So with wisdom, just to begin to explore a little bit about that quality itself, there's different ways that wisdom is experienced and understood. There's the kind of wisdom that comes through hearing and reading. So we, you know, that's kind of first how we gather information about something. And so in this case, around the the meditation practice, reading books about meditation, listening to Dharma talks, that's one way to gather wisdom. So we start there. We have to start somewhere. If we didn't hear somebody talk about it, we would never know it existed. So we begin there. We begin with that kind of information about meditation, about meeting experience with mindfulness. The second kind of wisdom is the kind of wisdom of reflection, of thinking about. We take that information in and we think about it. We reflect on it. We use our intellect to engage with what we've learned. Does this make sense to me? Is this a way I want to engage in my life? How can I use these teachings to help me meet my experience more skillfully? So those two kinds of wisdom are the kind of the place where we begin. We hear something and then we decide, does this make sense? Do I want to engage with it? They're both aspects of wisdom. And that's where we have to start. The third kind of wisdom is maybe what we mostly think of when we think of as wisdom, and that's the kind of wisdom that comes from understanding of insight, not through consciously reflecting on, but actually directly meeting our experience and seeing how things can shift and transform in the direct meeting of experience. So in talking about fear, which is kind of going to be the thread that I pull through these five faculties, what do we need to understand about fear in order to engage with it? So I'll just go through a few of the things. First, there's different kinds of fear. Just beginning to recognize that there are different kinds of fear in our experience can be helpful for us. Just simply naming them: anxiety, worry, fear, terror, dread. There's you know, different almost levels or layers of fear, from the kind of slight worry and anxiety down to terror. So there's the layers, the different levels of fear that exist in our minds. Then there are different ways that we experience fear. So for instance, there's a kind of a, what I might call a primal fear, that comes when we might have a life-threatening situation appear. There's an immediate kind of bodily experience, a bodily reaction when this kind of thing happens. That I at one point was a manager at Spirit Rock, and I was walking on the paths at kind of dusk, and I saw a crack in the sidewalk, and almost went, you know, almost stepped on the crack, but just, you know, kind of barely missed it. And that crack turned into a rattlesnake. And it coiled up and started rattling. And there was instant, I mean, there was fear. I mean, my body kind of froze, and I just watched it respond. I just watched myself back slowly away from the rattlesnake. And as I did that, the rattlesnake uncoiled and moved on. So this kind of fear is kind of it's a primal fear. It can just put us, actually, it puts us right into the present moment. I've found in the few times I've been in a life-threatening situation, there's been just complete presence of mind with that fear. This kind of fear doesn't really hinder mindfulness. In fact, I found it actually brings it up. So this is not the kind of fear I'm talking about tonight. This is not so much what I'm talking about. This kind of fear isn't so frequent for us, but what we seem to have done is internalized in our minds that, you know, we've got this idea or image of ourselves, and somehow that image feels threatened by the way people talk or think about us or say things to us. That image of us gets threatened, and then we feel fear around that. So it's not the life-threatening kind of fear, the actual your life is about to be terminated, but it's in some way it maps in our minds to something similar. we have this image of who we are, and that identity is threatened. And that identity then, because we have that a strong identity, we feel fear, need to protect, defend that identity. So that's more the kind of fear that I'm talking about tonight. So there's the process of this kind of fear coming up can take different forms. And again, I'm just at this point just talking about different understandings about fear to support your knowledge about how fear operates in our minds. So sometimes fear is generated by thoughts that we think about. For instance, we think about the future. We think about what might happen in the future, and we envision perhaps something unpleasant happening in the future. And that triggers an idea that, oh, that thing is going to happen. We've created this thought world in our minds, and we think, oh, that's going to happen, and we get afraid of something that we've created in our minds. Or perhaps there's something in the pleasant present moment that we don't particularly want to deal with. Some interaction between coworkers, for instance, you know, where you're somebody's saying something to you that you just don't want to deal with, and it generates a feeling of fear. So there may be something actually happening in the present moment like that. There may be, you know, that your coworker is saying something to you, and you feel like you're responding in fear to what your coworker is saying. But if you actually begin to look at what happens, what the process is there's not just what the coworker is saying, but there's something going on in your own mind. There's some kind of reaction, some kind of thought in your own mind that this person doesn't like me, or something like, this person is going to fire me. Some idea that comes up in your own mind, and that's what we react to. That's actually what we're reacting to, is these thoughts in our own mind. It's kind of like there's a story of a person who was painting a tiger, and they painted it with such detail that it looked just like a tiger. And then they stepped back and looked at it, and they got frightened because they saw a tiger and they ran away. That's actually what we do in our minds. We create things in our mind, then we're afraid of them. So this is something that we need to understand. This is the kind of a piece of wisdom that can support our meeting fear as it begins to arise, as it arises for us. We need to understand that thoughts in our mind can generate fear. Likewise, fear can be generated by emotions. So, for instance, you know, that this can have to do a lot with, history. For example, suppose when you were a child, whenever you were hungry, you had a particular way of crying that just your parents could not handle, and they went ballistic. And so you learned to be afraid when that hunger came. So that can all kind of be, it's underneath the realm of thought at this point. It's more at the level of feeling. You know, that at this point you may have a history of having that have happened to you. You can find that now you get hungry and there's this anxiety or worry or even fear around hunger. And it's like, well, why am I afraid around hunger? And we may not even know what the history was. And it's kind of subverbal. So it's less about thoughts at this point and more about the feeling and recognizing that there's this trigger. When I'm hungry, there's fear. We may not understand why, But there's that. So body states, and you know, it might also happen with an emotion. Maybe when you were sad and cried, you had a particular, you know, kind of action that your parents didn't like, and they really, again, this is like the trauma realm, that they abused you when you were sad, and so sadness brings up fear. So thoughts can generate fear, emotions can generate fear. So I just want to go back a little bit to the thoughts, because there's a piece I forgot to mention. And there's with the thoughts, there can be kind of underneath thoughts, there's a kind of a level of belief that can be operating that is a kind of thought, but it's a subtler kind of thought. So for instance, in a situation when you're dealing with people, and you find that there's a little bit of fear coming up, there may be some thoughts like, how will I be perceived in this situation? Or how am I being seen? Or am I being seen? Or, you know, those kinds of thoughts may be coming up. Will I be able to support myself? But there may be some kind of belief that underlies those thoughts. Some kind of belief of unworthiness, perhaps. Sense of, I'm not worthy to have this job. But that's not kind of at the conscious level, but there's just this kind of underlying pattern of a belief. So those beliefs, too, can contribute to our patterns of fear. Actually, a lot of what I'm saying can apply to any strong emotion. So if fear is not your particular trigger point, a lot of what I'm saying applies to many different emotions. And then there is also a fear that is skillful. There is a fear of the consequences of doing something unskillful. This is actually in the realm of concern. You know, sometimes this is talked about as concern, that if we are concerned about ourselves, concerned about our well-being, concerned about the well-being of others, there's a sense of not wishing to harm, not wishing to cause harm either to self or others. And so there can be a little sense of a kind of fear around, if I do that, you know, if an idea comes up about, if I do that thing, that's going to hurt somebody, and I don't want to do that. So there can be a little bit of a sense of fear around engaging in unskillful actions that can be skillful. It actually can support our movement in the direction of heading away from struggle and suffering. This kind of skillful fear can also get intertwined with unskillful fear. This kind of skillful fear can easily get intertwined with guilt, for instance, which is not so helpful. This kind of self-flagellation of, you know, I'm a bad person. It's simply much more, this kind of fear is much more of just acknowledging, yes, if I do this, this is the result, and that is not the thing I want to do. So these are ways to understand fear, understand that thoughts can generate fear, understand that feelings, emotions, body sensations can bring up fear, and that there is a skillful fear also. So in terms of the teachings, the kind of wisdom teachings of the Buddha around, in general, around suffering, fear is a kind of suffering. And the teachings around suffering are to understand suffering. So that points us to understanding fear. Get to know fear. Rather than trying to get rid of it, can we turn towards it and get to know it?
So it's helpful to learn how to observe the process of fear rather than acting on it. This little piece of wisdom, that it's helpful to observe rather than acting on it, this little piece of wisdom is really powerful. For me, it was transformative. Just this one little piece. You can go a long way with this little piece of wisdom. Another aspect of the wisdom teachings is around causes and conditions. How there are certain things that happen in our minds or in our experience that lead to other experiences, that everything unfolds as a result of causes and conditions. Things don't happen randomly. So, you know, the fear is coming up in this moment. It's not a random occurrence. There are things happening in the environment and in your mind that are meeting, that are creating that fear. And that fear is actually being created right here, right now, in the present moment. There may be some history, as I described earlier, there may be some history around trauma or a pattern from childhood that is being kind of reenacted right now. But it's not the fear from your childhood that you're experiencing right now. It is fear that you are meeting right here in this moment, based on things that are happening right here in this moment. This is another bit of wisdom that is very powerful. So the understanding of that, that actually everything is in our reactivity, in our fear, when we experience fear, that it's happening right now. The understanding of that leads us into the present moment, leads us into just meeting what's happening right now. What's obvious about what's happening right now? Can we meet that? Can we just engage with that? And it begins to unfold. The understanding of how our own pattern of fear is created in our minds begins to reveal itself to us through meeting it in the present moment. Then the next of the faculties is confidence or faith. So this quality is basically, it's a quality, initially it's a quality of just willingness to engage. Hearing some of the teachings, hearing some of the practices that we can use to meet our fear or any difficulty can perhaps give us a little inkling that, okay, maybe it's possible. Maybe seeing somebody who seems to understand something that we don't understand gives us a little bit of sense of, well, it seems like they know something. And they're saying, you know, this has helped me, so maybe I'll try it. So just that willingness to engage is the basic, that's the seeds of confidence. For me, one of the great benefits or one of the great blessings for me of the way the Buddha taught is that he doesn't actually say that you have to believe anything. He says, try it and see. You know, try it and see. See what happens. And there have been times in my practice when it's been like, well, how is this going to work? Or, you know, my mind has been racing in circles around my struggles. And it's like, well, how does this mindfulness work anyway? You know, and I get stuck in the thoughts around engaging as opposed to actually engaging. And then I remember, well, the Buddha didn't actually ask me to believe it. He just said, try it. And that helps me somehow to cut that thinking about, well, how does it work? And does it really work anyway? Into just, well, just run the experiment. Just run the experiment and see what happens when you meet your fear instead of trying to manipulate the world so that you don't have to experience it. As we do this, as we actually are willing to engage, we start to see some of the benefits of engaging. We start to see that as we meet our fear, as we begin to not resist it, but just turn towards it and just allow it, seems like there's a little bit of space around it. That little bit of space is actually the beginning of insight. It's the beginning of some wisdom that's actually developing as you do the practice. There's a little space around it. And you see that it's not quite so difficult to have that fear in your experience when you're observing it in this way. And so there's a sense that as we practice, our confidence becomes verified. It's not just that we have to believe it. It's not that we have to make a blind leap of faith to say, well, maybe this will work. We begin to know from our own experience that this kind of engagement shifts our relationship to experience. So this is confidence. So this manifests as a feeling of willingness to engage. It manifests as a sense of trust that the practice will unfold and that we will be able to meet our experience. So these qualities, as we engage with our struggles, you may begin to notice that sense of, yeah, I'm willing to engage, or I trust that the practice will support me here. Those are qualities that are worth recognizing as you engage with your attention to fear. This confidence, this willingness begins to give us the energy to engage. So that confidence gives us the sense of, yes, I'm going to do this. So these all kind of flow into each other. The energy that we gain can manifest just as a simple persistence, just at this sense of just keeping trying, just keeping going. So that gentle persistence itself has the quality of energy. And it actually, that gentle persistence results in more energy coming into our system. It's kind of a paradox, you know. We think we need energy in order to make effort, but making effort actually creates energy for us. So just that gentle willingness to moment by moment meet experience, that will create energy for us. Interest is also really helpful. Interest, if you're interested in what you're observing, that generates an energy to engage. And so can you be interested in understanding fear? Can you be interested in engaging with fear? So the energy here, this kind of energy, is directed towards the mindfulness of paying attention to our experience. So that brings us to the next of the faculties, mindfulness. There's a lot to say about mindfulness of fear. And I have only a few more minutes, so I'll just highlight some of the pieces. But mostly what I'm interested in encouraging is that you recognize, while you are attending to an experience, while you're attending to fear, that when you're bringing mindfulness to it, that you're actually cultivating that quality of mindfulness. Learning how to recognize that mindfulness is present in your experience brings more mindfulness. That when we recognize mindfulness, it actually encourages more and more and more mindfulness. It's like every time we're mindful and recognize it, it plants more seeds of mindfulness. And so they appear more often in our experience. The basic mindful instruction I've already mentioned, the basic mindfulness instruction around fear, is to turn towards it. Can you meet it? Neither repressing it nor acting on it. Can you just feel it? Explore it. One of the key ways to do this is exploring it in the body. I talked earlier about there being a lot of thoughts around fear. When we are engaged in the thoughts around fear, it's as if every time we think a thought that is associated with our fearful thought pattern, it adds juice to that fear. So it's like those thoughts themselves actually amp up the fear, just continue to make it stronger and stronger. So a really skillful way to meet fear with mindfulness is, rather than to try to pay attention to the thoughts, see if you can notice the impact that this fear is having on your body. Turn to the body. The body is very grounding. It's in the present moment, and it will give you great feedback. Often fear doesn't feel very pleasant. You know, there'll be perhaps some contraction in your stomach, some tightness, some fluttering or agitation in the core of your body. If you can learn how to just hang out with those feelings, it will go a long way to being able to kind of break the chain of thoughts that are kind of keeping the fear in motion. And when that chain of thoughts is broken, then the fear has an opportunity to simply wind out. You know, there's an understanding in neuropsychology that a particular emotion has a kind of a release of neurotransmitters and hormones into our body. So there's a flush of hormones into our body when there's an emotion that arises. And if what our thoughts do basically is keep that flush happening. Just keeps that flush going. So it keeps the hormones circulating through our body that make us feel this way, make us have these feelings of anxiety, make us have the feelings of tightness, of tension, of fluttering in the torso. If you, and this is the understanding of how the brain works, if you simply have that flush of hormone go through your system, and there's no additional flush, it apparently lasts about 90 seconds. So if you can ride it out for 90 seconds without keeping poking it and flushing more hormones into your system, it's not going to last for very long. Now, it may come back. You know, it may come back, but learning how to ride things out in this way is one of the great joys of meditation practice. Because we begin to see we don't have to be at the mercy of our feelings. We don't have to be at the mercy of fear. We can ride it out and then see there's something on the other side that's just, oh, it's gone. There's maybe a sense of spaciousness, of ease in that riding it out. So I'm going to just make a couple other key suggestions around mindfulness of fear. One is in noticing, if you can, so in noticing kind of that flush through the body, noticing when it ends. Now that can be a great practice, actually, is if you have some kind of an emotion that's flooding through your system, can you just ride it out and see if you can see, when does it actually end? Seeing the ending that way really begins to point us to or have us recognize deep in the core of our body that these things are impermanent. And this is wisdom. This is how mindfulness leads to wisdom. One of the ways mindfulness leads to wisdom. That we can witness the impermanence of things. And it's the witnessing of it has a different quality to it than just knowing, oh yeah, I know things are impermanent. Trying to talk ourselves into, yeah, this is impermanent, it'll go away. The meeting it and then seeing it go away, then you know really deep in your core that it is impermanent. Another practice or another way to explore, particularly patterns that seem to be familiar, ones that come up for us a lot. You know, if fear comes up for you a lot, notice when it's present and notice when it's not present. Sometimes we have this belief or this idea that there's a kind of an underlying field of anxiety or worry or fear that's always there. And so we don't actually notice when it's not there because of this belief that's operating. So actually recognizing that there are moments when it's not there kind of like pokes holes in that belief that it's continuous. That's really powerful. So recognize when it's present and recognize when it's absent. If you're like me, if you've got a very powerful pattern around fear, you might recognize it's absent and say, well, yeah, it's absent now, but I really know that what I am is... Just notice that your mind is telling stories. See if you can connect in with the fact that it's not always there, especially if there's a strong pattern for you around it. Another very helpful tool is to, if you know, for instance, that you have a pattern around fear, if you know that, oh yeah, this thing that's happening to me, I know that fear is at the middle of that. But what's actually happening to you is that you're resistant to feeling the fear. That there's something actually kind of on the outside, a larger feeling on the outside of that fear. But you know, yeah, well, underneath that resistance, there's the fear. And what I really need to do is to feel that fear in order to get this thing to fall apart. You're kind of jumping over what's actually happening in the present moment, which is resistance, which is not wanting to feel this fear. We have a tendency to do that because we know ourselves. We've learned ourselves. We know what's kind of in the middle, what's motivating us. And we kind of jump over what's actually happening, thinking that, well, what I really need to do is to push into the middle and see that fear. And that's actually not so helpful. What's most helpful is always, always just meet what's obvious. This is something I've been saying a lot in this week's retreat so far, just noticing what's obvious. When a pattern arises, if what's obvious is, I don't want to feel this fear, I don't want to feel this fear is what's happening, that feeling of resistance to the fear. Can you be with that? Don't try to ignore the resistance to push yourself into the fear. There may be good reason for that resistance to be there. And mindfulness is a very gentle approach. It kind of will, you take in the largest aspect of whatever you're experiencing and just meet that with a gentle, soft touch. And somehow that gentle, soft touch seems to melt away the layers over time. It is over time. It's not something that happens immediately. And I'll just take a couple of minutes to wrap this up, because I didn't quite get to everything. So so mindfulness, applying mindfulness and getting familiar with what it feels like. The more continuous the mindfulness, the more we can meet something, the more we can meet our fear, the more we can meet whatever's going on for us, the more we can just meet what is for continuous periods of time, concentration will develop. The meeting of energy and mindfulness sustains the mindfulness, which produces concentration. And that concentration is kind of what gives the mind its power. It's like the sharp edge of a knife. And that's what begins to let us really clearly see the impermanence of our experience. That's what really allows us to recognize the moment something disappears, or the triggers that are in place, the causes and conditions that come into place. As we see things with continuity, we really begin to see the causes and conditions at play in our experience. And we see that there's just patterns. It's like dominoes falling. And there's no one there actually setting up the dominoes. It's more like the dominoes set themselves up. We can see that with mindfulness and concentration. And that leads to wisdom. That leads to the kind of wisdom that transforms us. That leads to the wisdom of deeply understanding the impermanence of phenomena. Deeply understanding there's no one running the show, that it's just causes and conditions unfolding and playing themselves out. Deeply understanding how suffering manifests in our experience. that experience of wisdom has a feeling to it. You know, we there's a kind of a sense of under. It's like the light goes on. There's a clear sense of that. And as you meet experience and kind of get a sense of a shift of perspective, it may first feel just a shift of perspective. Oh, this doesn't have to be such a challenging thing for me, this feeling of fear. I can meet it. That shift of perspective is wisdom developing. The seeing of something disappear and the recognition of impermanence, that is wisdom. So as we engage in our practice, all of these qualities are being cultivated. See if you can just not exactly look for them or try to find them, but just be aware that they're there. Even just the simple awareness that they're operating can help us to recognize them, which strengthens them, which will help you to follow this path and unravel your own ways that your mind creates struggles for you. So I apologize for going over a few minutes. Thank you for your attention.